Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It's a Tuesday, and it's hour two on the Chuck Oliver Show. That means that hour one, day bar two, happens every week on Tuesdays. The entire the second half of hour one is always day bar two from College Football Matrix. If you didn't listen to it today, it was just fascinating stuff. And I said on air I would never talk 8 minutes about punting. I said off air, absolutely, because I mean that's honestly it's fun. It's one of the fun things. It's one of the best parts I always loved about when I did coach was it was the point counterpoint, the cat, the mouse, the whatever. I told a story before. I walked into the players' dorm, the meal area at there's a place out at Auburn. It's called Sewell Hall, and it's back when you used to have traditional players' dorms. And when you would walk in the front door, like the where they lived was behind it, but you turn to the right, and then the big dining hall was in there. And so on Tuesdays, the media could eat, and because we go to the press conference, and then after the press conference, you go eat. So the players are all done, and we would go in there, and it was awesome, especially for a student in college, because it was not like, what do you want, like at Piccadilly or Morrison's, and it wasn't like, you know, sandwiches or whatever, or a portion, like you went down and you got some. They gave you the ladle, man. The chicken and dumplings, Salisbury steak, you name it. And because they were feeding the football players and the athletes, and I was like, heck yeah, Tuesday's favorite day of my week, because we'd always eat after the press conference. So when I would eat a regular meal as a student at Auburn, it would be about 12, 15 minutes. When I would eat at the players' dorm on Tuesday, I mean, it's a production, folks. They're second. There may be thirds. And I will say that I understand the gluttony. It's one of them seven deadlies. But sometimes it would be so unattractive. And I know I let my mom down. She could feel it. I took thirds with me. That's not Southern. And my mom said, the number one thing, Mama, do not wear out your welcome. If someone is nice enough to invite you, do not wear out your welcome. Don't take the last piece of chicken. Don't take the last donut. Don't go back for thirds, especially, and ask for a carry container. Point is, I walk in, and the first person I saw over in the far right is Pat Dye, Coach Dye, and two or three assistants. And I just looked over, and they're talking about the blocking of the backside guard on some play. Well, it was chicken and dumplings day, which was big news for me. So after I go through what I'm going through, it's about 45 minutes later, and I'm leaving. They're talking about the same play, the same player. 45 minutes later, they're still talking about the blocking of the backside guard on whatever the play was. That had not turned the page. 45 minutes. Well, that's how you turn a program around and beat Bama and win SEC titles and whatever else. And so, yes, the point to all this, it matters every last single detail. And when we're talking with Dave about – I've got so many news items I was going to get to. We're talking to Dave about some of this stuff and, you know, just the drill down about available punt yards. It's just so, so valuable. And he now, as I said, Dave is with coaches, athletic directors, players, agents. It's just a really, really valuable service, especially right now. Like I said, it all matters if you have goals to be a champion, because there are 50 other places and 40 of them have no chance of winning a championship. 50 other places where the mentality is, oh, no, 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 we understand. You know, I'm at Arizona State. I'm Herm Edwards, and I don't think we're going to win a national championship, but I know what it takes to win a national championship. And so we're going to be an 8-4 team that does everything you're supposed to do to win a national championship. Then there are places where you realize you ain't got the right coach because you're not doing things the way you're supposed to. And so there might be 10 or 12 each year that really can win a title. Folks, there's 50 where they know what it looks like, and they're trying to do it. And that's how a guy who was the head coach at Bowling Green, because you can't win a national title at Bowling Green. That's how a guy at Bowling Green gets hired at Utah. You can't win a national championship at Utah. But you can go undefeated and finish in the top three. And then you can get hired at Florida. You know what you can do at Florida? You win national championships. You know what you do at Ohio State? You can win national championships. And so that's actually where Dave looks. Who is doing everything there? He said Kent State. Kent State. He actually, the Kent State coach was the other guy in the mix for UCF with Gus. So, yeah, it all comes full circle. It all really does matter. All right. I've got stuff I'll mention maybe in the final segment. We'll do a CFT 365, but we're going to take a quick break right now. Come back with more college football talk next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Been doing it, what is this, about 6.5 years? Yeah, 6.5 years now. 9 states, 51 sticks. So talking college ball every single day for 2 hours. Appreciate y'all putting a blessing in my life. Want to welcome on now from Saturday Down South. I think he is in the only warm place in America. Connor O'Gara. Connor, you're in Orlando. What's it like down there? Make me jealous.
Man, it is low 70s and sunny right now, and I have never felt so privileged to be living in this area than I have this week, because my entire feed is just SEC places that are dealing with unprecedented cold and winter storms, and I'm thinking to myself, man, I've been saying for a long time, I think Orlando just kind of has a bubble around it. It's not really the South. Now I think it's more of a weather bubble that's just around Orlando, maybe the entire state of Florida, but man, I am appreciating this warm weather, and I am not going to complain about it.
So snow in Texas, 40 in Arizona, and Connor walking around in short pants.
I was worried about how much I was going to sweat today on the afternoon stroll.
Did you go to the 45 or did you just use the SPF 30?
Probably just the 30. I don't want to get, I want to get a little bit of color, but I don't want to get, too fried or anything like that. You got to stay safe out here during these times, during these, mid-February times.
So just build your base right now is what you're doing. Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. Let's talk a little college football. And I was reading that Saturday Down South, tremendous site, and it's free. But I was reading it Saturday Down South, and I believe you wrote about, or somebody on the staff wrote about, somebody that I started talking about at the end of the regular season as he is preseason All-SEC, and that is the mini Benny. That is Christopher Rodriguez, stud running back at Kentucky. And there are people right now listening who are big-time college football fans. I'm not kidding, Connor. They've never heard the name Chris Rodriguez.
So I wrote that story a little bit ago, and I think that there are a lot of people who would look at a guy like Chris Rodriguez and say, there's probably 4 or 5 SEC backs that they would name ahead of him, without knowing that, if you factor in Pro Football focus grades. He's the number one returning back in America by those metrics. And it's not necessarily the flashy numbers because he didn't have the volume. He doesn't have that 1,000-yard season yet. He's never even started a game at Kentucky. But he is one of those guys that when he gets the ball in his hands, he makes things happen. And he's a guy from, you know, your neck of the woods in Georgia there and was one of these guys who wasn't a top 1,000 recruit. He didn't jump off the page. He didn't get that flashy Georgia offer. But he's a guy that had an unbelievably prolific high school career at Ola and was somebody that, you know, kind of flew under the radar. And he had the mini Benny nickname for Benny Snell, someone that, you know, did become a national name in college football. And, you know, he embodied a lot of those same traits. But he's just the guy who has really worked his tail off and has done everything that Mark Stoops has asked him to. And what he did down the stretch this past year was really special. Now that he's going to get a chance to start, he is one of those backs that you should not sleep on. He is a great sleeper to lead the SEC in rushing, despite the fact that they're changing from Eddie Grant's offense to Liam Cohen's offense, which is going to implement some of these Sean McVay concepts. Yeah. So he's a great name to keep an eye on and somebody that Kentucky fans are really fired up about.
I have opined that Kentucky, like right now where Stoops has them, that this is Kentucky football's 100%. That this is just about, like if they get a guy like Josh Allen to come through, they'll have maybe a season spike, a Randall Cobb. Now, every program has those ever so often. But where Stoops has this, I think this is Kentucky's, this is their end of the rainbow. Agree or disagree?
I don't think end of the rainbow is the right way to phrase it. I think you have to look at a couple of things. Stoops' contract, Andy Staples wrote about this a year ago. You could make a case that it is the best job in college football to have when you factor in the contract and the incentives and the pressure in terms of how Kentucky football fans feel about what the program should be doing. It's so much different. It is night and day compared to Kentucky basketball. But you factor that in, and then you also look at the fact that he turned down Florida State.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a big-time job, and in what world does the Kentucky head football coach turn down Florida State, a place where he had been previously, a place where he has had success? And I think you look at that situation, you look at what we are able to do now in the TV revenue era, where a place like Kentucky can actually afford to keep somebody like Stoops, and they can pay him really, really well. I think it changes, and I think that this is more of the floor of where Kentucky is at right now. The floor is just so much higher, right? I mean, I think you even look at what they did at the end of a disappointing year. Beating a good NC State team in a bowl game shows you that this isn't a Kentucky team that is going to have these lows that they used to. Mark Stoops is just too good of a coach. I think they recruit extremely well, and they do such a good job of finding these diamonds in the rough and being able to develop that sort of talent. Yeah, they're not going to win an SEC title or anything like that, but at the same time, I just think their floor is in such a better place than it was a decade ago.
Continue with Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. All right, so what up with Shane Beamer? We've got a first-time head coach who has not been able to hold his initial staff together for more than a few weeks at a time with no in-state recruiting, but what is in-state is probably the second or third best program in America. So I'll go back to the beginning. What's up with Shane Beamer? What's he looking? What's he looking at over the next couple of years?
You know, I think the mindset has to be different with him. That's the biggest thing that has to change. I think South Carolina fans grew frustrated with Will Muschamp because of some of the stubbornness. And it wasn't always the stubbornness from an offensive standpoint because he was willing to make that change and to go out and say, Mike Bobo is going to have complete control over the offense and he's going to have all decisions to make in terms of the quarterback decision, which obviously that came to Bobo. That wasn't something that Muschamp was advocating for, where he's saying,
oh,
yeah,
no, that was all Bobo. You're right.
100%. And I think that was the difference at the end of the Muschamp era.
I think he hated Ryan Helinski. I think Mike Bobo just flat out, he wanted him out of the program.
I don't know if hate's the right word. He just didn't develop in his system. And I think he hated the idea of playing him. I think that became so apparent because, the steps were, they were bizarre. But I think with Beamer, what they want to see, South Carolina fans, they want to see that willingness to embrace some of the former stars of the program and be able to not necessarily live up to the standard that Spurrier set, but at the same time, you have to be more competitive. You can't just get absolutely trucked every time you face Clemson. You got to show that, hey, we belong – at least on the same field as them. Obviously, nobody's expecting them to do that on a yearly basis, but I think Shane Beamer is in a place now where he needs to be able to pivot from an offensive standpoint. He needs to be able to develop that quarterback talent. They want to see Luke Doty actually become a worthwhile starter, a better-than-average starter in the SEC, and they want him to be able to recruit in-state. And I think that's really going to determine how high he could fly at South Carolina. But, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot of questions about him. He didn't inherit a very, you know, ideal situation, despite the fact that they have the new $50 million facility, which is out of this world. But, you know, I still think that there's a lot left to be said about Shane Beamer, despite the fact that he basically lost, you know, what felt like the majority of his staff to Auburn.
All right, because of the style of play, I don't know anybody in the conference is going to catch Matt Corral next year as far as just numbers. And quarterback numbers only mean so much. They're indicators more than anything. But that's – and JT Daniels, you know, you can project him putting up huge numbers. Tell me what you project for Emory Jones.
Gosh, I'm fascinated because I feel like every time I've brought up anything related to Emory Jones on Twitter, it's like – a parent protecting their firstborn son with the way that Florida fans react to this kid because they've been waiting so long now. I mean, this is the old-fashioned route to have to wait till year four to see this kid actually start. You know, I think he's going to have his ups and downs. I think that from an accuracy standpoint, he has to improve. And I'm interested to see where Dan Mullen adjusts because kind of lost in the shuffle of what he did this past year in a very polarizing year that he had in Gainesville was the fact that Florida had the number one passing offense in America. And this is a totally different style than what we've seen Dan Mullen run in the past. Kyle Trask is obviously different than Emory Jones. We saw that even with Emory Jones coming into games and kind of spelling him at points. But, you know, I think he has capabilities of being one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I don't think he's one or two. I take JT Daniels over him right now, and I definitely take Matt Corral over him. But I think he's in that conversation of like 4 to 5 right now where you have to be intrigued by the potential. You have to be intrigued by the guy calling plays for him, and you have to be intrigued by the young talent that Florida has coming back at the pass catcher positions, despite the fact they're losing a ton to the NFL. But I think he's got to have the right mindset there, and I think that Florida needs to establish that balance. They haven't had that balance. They need to develop that running game, and I think Emory Jones is a big part of that. So I'm optimistic, but I'm at the same time, I'm not anointing him in the way that some of these Florida fans are.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be funny here. I've fallen in love with Ken Seals. I mean, I don't know what else Vanderbilt has. They've got a legit SEC quarterback, not somebody who can rule the conference, but they've got a good-looking freshman quarterback for you. Last year, in the midst of just disaster, I was like, that kid's kind of treading water.
You know, Chuck, I think I've done, I do several radio shows in a given week, and I think the amount of times that I've heard Ken Seals brought up on the radio, you own the only two references to Ken Seals. Yeah. So I will officially call you the Ken Seals bandwagon leader. Now, whether or not he succeeds in this new offense, that remains to be seen because, you know, he's dealing with a little bit of some new circumstances here with David Rye and Joey Lynch, who are going to run that offense. And they kind of have a balance of principles. Like Joey Lynch runs a little bit more of that run heavy stuff. That's what he did at Ball State. That's what he did at Colorado State. And what David Rye did was, you know, his background is a little bit more trending toward the air raid, working on Cliff Kingsbury's staff with the Arizona Cardinals and then even back at Texas Tech. So I think they kind of want to have that balance. I know it's so cliche to say, well, yeah, we want to be multiple, but how does Ken Seals fit into that? I think he's probably their best option. He still has to improve from an efficiency standpoint, but they actually have a little bit of skill talent returning to that team where you would think that they'd be able to improve, but it's going to be a meshing of concepts, it looks like, from the jump there.
All right, just real quick, we got like 60 seconds left and don't even require that. Do you have an opinion or do you have knowledge? What how much footsie did Tennessee play with Gus?
I don't think very much. I don't think a whole lot. And I think timing is everything in life. And I don't think that right now Gus would have been a good fit at Tennessee. I really don't. Yeah. And I think he's a much better fit at UCF. And I could also think at the same time that Gus is a better coach than Josh Heupel. He's definitely more proven. But at the same time, I would still think that Josh Heupel would be a better fit at Tennessee for what they need right now. And I watched that press conference yesterday with Gus, and he's fired up by UCF.
Yes,
there's no doubt about it. But if he goes to Tennessee, it's basically the same situation he's at Auburn. You know, he's got people questioning him constantly, and they're talking about the play calling and fans bringing up his buyout every 2 seconds. He doesn't have that at UCF. And I'm excited to see kind of what this next chapter is for him.
Totally different situation down there. Connor, appreciate it every time. Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right, which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
We continue on a Tuesday, and as we had mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, on Tuesdays we have Dave Bartu with us from College Football Matrix, and he had mentioned a little bit, and we didn't talk a whole lot about it, though. I didn't get into it, and I didn't have my CFB 365 today either because I got bogged down in some other stuff. So Tennessee has a defensive coordinator, and they have hired the now former co-DC from Penn State, and it's Tim Banks. As Josh Heupel continues to put together his staff at Tennessee, and it's a lot of names that you know. If you're a Southern football fan, I don't know if you know Tim Banks or not, but it is Gardner, it is Cody Burns. You know, it's Josh Heupel probably, but he's putting together his staff, and he's taking some time, and there is no urgency. You know, National Signing Day is now 2 weeks back, and whatever scholarships anybody has left, there it's not like any other year before where there's always a four-star, five-star just hanging out there waiting to be signed late. It's not that. If you've got a scholarship or four or five, and you know that if you have seniors who are returning who should be out of eligibility, if you have seniors who are returning, then they don't count next year. So, you know, you got eight guys who have said, no, I'm coming back. I'm going to play a six-year. I'm coming back. Well, you could have 93 kids, theoretically. And the math will, you know, kind of meander a little bit, but that's theoretically what you could do. So Tennessee, Josh Heupel, they're going to be like everybody else. They're hitting the transfer portal. And whether it's graduates or just from the general portal where every kid in there is assuming, oh, yeah, the NCAA, they're going to give us that eligibility, the immediate eligibility, the waiver for the one-time transfer, and I don't have to sit out and I can play right away. That's going to happen. Remember, that got tabled last month. There was an actual conversation about that, and it was name, image, and likeness. Both of them were covered. And the immediate eligibility, the one-time transfer allowance, they didn't pass that. They didn't even vote on it. They didn't even talk about it. They're like, yeah, we'll get to this later. We got more pressing stuff. And you look at the portal. You know what hasn't happened since signing day? You haven't seen a ton of kids jumping in the portal. Do you know the realization bouncing around a lot of college football players after signing day? Whoa, wait a minute. If I have a scholarship, maybe I just need to hang on to this one. We talked about it before signing day, that if you've got a scholarship offer from a program you're jazzed about, what's Chuck's advice? Take it. It's way, way different this year. All right, I told you we were going to talk a little Georgia and also a little Tennessee by proxy with a good friend of ours from UGASports.com. It is Jason. But Jason, welcome, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are y'all doing?
Doing all right. Like I said, you covered Georgia, I guess, mostly, but you just had a fascinating piece. I read it a couple of days back about Jeremy Pruitt before he got the axe in Knoxville earlier this year. You wrote about when he was in Athens. And I got to tell you, Jason, I'm sure you'll remember this. And it's actually, you mentioned it in the story. I was at work on a Friday, and I see a Mark Richt tweet come across my screen where he says, I'm taking time, and he didn't say this, but I'm taking time out of my game prep to announce that our DC will be our DC. And I'm like, dude, you got a game in 24 hours. What are you doing? But he felt a need to do it. Just give us the background. You wrote about it on the UGA Rivals site. It was a fascinating article.
Right. Thanks. That week was very interesting because, as you mentioned, Mark Richt had to put out this tweet that he wasn't firing Jeremy Pruitt before the Kentucky game, which came a week after the Florida loss, the infamous Fatone-Bauta game.
Oh, yeah.
And so that week was when you started reading and kind of seeing and hearing a lot of the stuff about Jeremy Pruitt coming to light. That was when everybody had enough and they wanted to go public, and some did, and you know, a lot of it was anonymously sourced. But you know, getting some open records returned from UGA about it. 2 days the week before, it was 2 days or two incidents in a 3-day span. One was actually during the Florida game. One was at practice where. And Jeremy Pruitt was, he had his guys on the team. He also had guys on the team who absolutely hated him. I'm sure it was the same in Tennessee. And this is a guy who, he definitely has the old school philosophy, which a lot of kids today aren't going to like. But there's also coaches on the staff who do not, at least on that Georgia staff, that did not see eye to eye with Pruitt either. But at least what was returned and when it came to, documented events. There was a practice where a player tripped over a football, and he blamed the equipment manager, who was essentially an intern.
Yeah,
blamed him for the loose football. Reads him the riot act, tells him he doesn't want him to work near him anymore. So the kid starts walking away, and Jeremy Pruitt picks up the football and strikes him in the back of the head. There was one witness that could definitely say he did it. There was another who said that a player would definitely say it. The player was never named. Human Resources found Jeremy Pruitt in violation of the workplace violence policy, mainly because it specifically states that that you cannot throw objects at a person, or I would imagine just in the workplace, you can't throw objects. That's considered a violent act, and so. Yeah, he was found liable for that. He did appeal, and it was denied. He brought his own witnesses, but none of the witnesses, according to HR, could say that Jeremy Pruitt definitively did not throw the football, or that they were watching him the entire time. So they kind of they tried to. And I had heard after the fact too, that Pruitt instructed those people to lie on his behalf. Fast forward 2 days later in the Florida game. He gets into a heated argument with a GA because the GA was in charge of personnel. Personnel didn't go on the field. Pruitt takes it a step further from just yelling at the guy, takes two hands, shoves him on the sideline. Mark Richt was a witness. That ended up making it to HR. I think it's easy for maybe somebody who was a Pruitt fan at Georgia, or maybe a Tennessee fan who didn't want Pruitt to be fired. I think it might be easy for them to say, well, this is football. That stuff sort of happens. These are two documented cases, which really are just a microcosm of the kind of person that Jeremy Pruitt is as a coach. He is not somebody who gets along well with people that you have to work with on a daily, regular basis. And I think that's been the trend no matter where he's at. It's no surprise that after 3 years he's out of Tennessee. It's no surprise that you go back to Aaron Murray, his comments when Tennessee hired him about how bad the guy was. He does not have a whole lot of friendly acquaintances. He has his friends, his close guys. Obviously, Nick Saban loves the guy. When it comes out to his tight circle, it really doesn't expand any further than that.
Has anyone, continue with Jason Butt from UGASports.com, has anyone queried UGA about what was in your background check before you hired him? Because I don't think that somebody, goes the first 40 or 45 years of his life, and then all of a sudden, twice in 3 days, has physical altercations with someone. And then, you know, up in Tennessee, you hear the story about him firing his defensive line coach during a game. And right. and several other reports like this. I mean, because I want to know about Tennessee's background check and Georgia's.
So Georgia's would be interesting. You know, what happened at Florida State? I don't think that's anything that has really come to light. Well, you know, there's been rumors. I'm going to obviously state those rumors because that's what they are. But, you know, what exactly was there documented, you know, from Florida State? You know, did Jimbo Fisher have a problem? I think most accounts suggest there wasn't a problem. On a personal level between Jimbo Fisher and Jeremy Pruitt.
No, Jimbo's about winning. And so if you win, I mean, right. you could have had right. Saddam
and he was only
over there.
Yeah, and he was only there 1 year, too.
Yeah.
But that was a perfect season. So there's not a whole lot to, you know, throw objects at
everybody gets along.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think when you look back with everything in context today, 1 year at a program that just won the national championship, you know, it was odd then that he was making the move. It's even crazier now. I mean, yes, we know anybody who's paid attention has heard those particular rumors. Mm-hmm. But you know, that said, you know, what else? Was there anything within the athletic department that happened? I think that would be really interesting when it comes to Georgia's you know, background check, but Tennessee would have had easy access to this. I mean, Tennessee could have contacted Mark Richt. Tennessee could have contacted Thomas Brown. Yep. They could have contacted John Lilly. A lot of the other coaches on Georgia staff that weren't necessarily in his inner circle. I think Kevin Scherer and Tracy Rocker, those were guys in Pruitt's inner circle. Will Friend also. They had plenty of opportunities to go and contact folks about Jeremy Pruitt. And, you know, when you're in a situation like college football where winning matters so much, you overlook certain things in the process, especially when you were like Tennessee at the time and you were just desperate to get a coach yeah. during that whole fiasco. So but you know, fiasco is the right word to describe that process. That's how you end up with a guy like Jeremy Pruitt. And that's why 3 years later, you're getting rid of a guy like Jeremy Pruitt.
And last thing I want to ask you is just your general experience, because you were covering the Georgia program that year, weren't you?
Yeah, in 2015, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to tell you, and I think maybe if you ever listen or like when we talk, I mean, the kind of questions I normally ask and what I do on the air every day, I don't get into the salacious stuff. You know, people ask me, Jason, you know, Chuck, you got sources. Yeah. I was like, I use sources for injuries and depth chart. I don't care about the rest of the stuff. Jason, even I was hearing stuff. In Tallahassee, the stuff that you're kind of alluding to, the stuff in Athens. And I was like, I don't even look for this stuff, and I'm hearing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that stuff follows you when you're that out in the open, I think. There's a brazen quality to the guy. You know, now I guess he's going to be with the Giants. I don't think the Giants have officially announced it, but that seems, you know, it's been reported that he's going to take a job there. You know, Kevin Scherer is actually with the Giants. So there's and Joe Judge, I believe, worked with him years ago. So, you know, maybe being in the NFL, and I know the NFL won't put up with that. The players won't
players
put up
won't.
With that kind of shtick.
No.
But you know, that said, you know, if he's going to try to think about who he is as a coach, maybe not being around college athletes is a good thing because, you know, what he's done, he's burned so many bridges and not even tried to maintain certain relationships with people he's come across during his college coaching career. And that's why, you know, I think, you know, especially those that were familiar with Georgia and know what's going on or knew what was going on with them, they're not surprised in the slightest to see, especially when you talk about the recruiting violations that have allegedly occurred and just how out in the open they were about it. I mean, that's him. It's this careless, reckless attitude. And unfortunately for him, it goes beyond just the scope of wins and losses and trying to chase titles and recruits and so forth. It goes beyond and into the realm of creating a toxic workplace environment.
Got to agree with you on that, Jason. Thank you, man, for making the time today. It was a great article, great piece there. Next time, we'll just talk about Georgia. How about that?
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Jason Budd again from UGA Sports. We're going to take a break, come back, wrap up next.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I have to assume that Gus Malzahn turned us down. I have to. Because I also have to assume that my athletic director, no matter who it is, made that phone call. Even if I knew there was a 99.999% chance he's going to say no, he's on the market. You're making the phone call.
That's Dave Bartu from College Football Matrix. He's on with us bottom of hour one every single Tuesday. That was earlier today, and he was talking about the situation at Tennessee. I'd said, do you know and do you have an opinion? And those are two different things. You know, do you know? Yes, I've been told by the athletic director. Do you have an opinion? Well, general whispers are, you know, whatever. And he says, I don't know, but I better. And what Dave was saying is, oh, no. No one in Knoxville has told me they contacted Gus Malzahn, but they better have. And he said, sometimes it's easy. Even when you know you're going to get a no, he says, sometimes it's easy. That's a call you have to make. He says, if you didn't, you don't look at who the head coach is. You look at who the AD is. Why don't you call Gus Malzahn? So it may have been very brief. It may have been even just a speed dial to Jimmy. And Jimmy's like, yeah, pass. And I want to mention that there is a chance that both of these statements can be true. Gus Malzahn's a better coach. Josh Heupel is a better fit for where Tennessee is right now. Both of those statements can be accurate. So always appreciate Dave. Always look forward to Tuesdays. He, bottom of hour one on Tuesdays, and Landry, bottom of the hour. Chris Landry, bottom of the hour on Wednesdays. Always just tremendous, and so I appreciate Dave. All right, Dan Matthews is going to pop in just a couple of minutes, but right now I'm going to wrap it up with the closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments, presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
Home field matters, home court matters, home ice matters, home pitch matters. Isn't that what they play soccer on? Pitch. Way more than even I believed. What both teams have gotten to deal with the past 9 or 10 months in every sport, do you know what it is more than anything? Quiet. And the ability to communicate to all their teammates and players even while the ball is in play. And I'm talking teammates on the field or the court or whatever, or from the sidelines giving instruction. The result has been offensive benchmarks of a historical level in several cases, regardless of sport or season. And the takeaway is when there are 70,000 people in the stadium, or 30,000 at a Major League Baseball game, or 15,000 at an NBA game in an arena, both teams have to deal with not quiet. But the home team just gets a reduced version of this, and the opponent doesn't. When both teams have quiet, when both teams have the same general experience sound-wise, what you see is the ability for everybody to communicate instead of mostly one team to communicate. It's indisputable now. There's always been disagreements over, well, is there an actual home field advantage, home court advantage? What does it mean? Is it more in the postseason, etc.? I can tell you it's in every game, every sport, every season, because we've now, for the worst reasons possible, had about 10 months of constantly looking at empty arenas and stadiums for the most part and being able to evaluate. If you look at, for instance, just one example, and you can pick hundreds of others, 2019, the ACC, just pick one conference. Clemson led the league in scoring 43.5 points a game. Second was Louisville at 33. This past year, Clemson, their regular self, 41.5. Second in the ACC. Now remember, just a year earlier, 33, and then there was 33, and then there was a 31, and then there was a 30.7. This year in the ACC, Clemson first, 43.5. Then it was 41, 36, 34, 33. You have to get down to the seventh leading scoring team in the ACC to match the second highest scoring offense in the ACC from a year ago. It's just an explosion. Like I said, home court, home field matters way more than we ever understood. Dan Matthews, how are you?
Oh, very well, as we close this out. And actually, you know, kind of to piggyback of what you're just talking about right there, I've been to a couple of college basketball games where, just like everywhere else that has allowed anybody inside the building, very limited attendance.
Yeah.
Chuck, it's been loud. Like, it's been loud in there, and I think that it's probably just because my ears aren't conditioned to it just yet. That's going to be an adjustment for everybody when that comes back, because you're even going to have defensive players who are even able to be a little bit more audible in terms of what the communication was and everything else instead of the hand signals there. It's going to be hard on them, even with the home field advantage. So another adjustment that's going to be made in the post-pandemic world. Speaking of having crowds, I don't know if you saw this, but a release was put out by the Florida Athletic Department about how spring football is going to be conducted down in Gainesville. And one of them is they're right now planning on the full 15 practices. Looks like they're going to get that. God willing, knock on wood, all that kind of stuff. No spring game, at least with fans in the building, because right now they're a vaccination and testing site there at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, so they are going to push off on that. Chuck, I am not the guy who wants things canceled or postponed. Far from it, as a matter of fact. I want to see things played because I feel like it's one of those things that, if nothing else, it gives us somewhat of an outlet to not hear about, I can't get an appointment for a vaccination or anything else out there. I want to see it on the field. I think this is one, though, of coaches, if I'm them, punt on this opportunity for now, because we all know that spring games, for the most part, it's just a way for the fans to scratch the itch, to be able to get there and see who's the next cornerback, who's the next running back, all these different types of things. But mostly for the programs, they want the recruits out there. They want the recruits on the sidelines. They want to be able to have the spring barbecue with them afterwards and do all those different types of things. Punt on it now. Usually programs have that one day for pictures and autographs and everything during spring camp. Give them two this year. If you can't make it that one weekend, make it the following weekend. Give them another one. Hopefully the dead period is gone by this, because I think if we learned anything from the pandemic, Chuck, when it comes to sports, give yourself time to plan and give yourself time to adjust if the plan A doesn't really work out.
Yeah, I think runway was the term that a lot of folks use. Give yourself as much runway as possible. And I agree with you about the value of an actual game. There's no value, you know, I'm saying an actual spring game, finger quotes, because it's not a game. You can get that in a 100-play scrimmage. You can get that in because you get those. Those are figured in. You get a couple of scrimmages as well. It's all, you know, divvied out. The NCAA tells you what you can do. But Florida is saying, no, we're just going to use that 15th session. We're just going to use that as a practice. And I agree with you. Hey, what kind of unbelievable news would it have been 9-10 months ago? Hey, sorry, you know, any college football program, you don't get a spring game because we're using your stadium for vaccinations? Absolutely fantastic. 10 months later, what do you mean no spring game? Hush up, you. All right, wraps it up for a Tuesday. Give me 22 hours, folks. I'll recharge those batteries. Me, David, Dan, everybody. Be back this time tomorrow. More college football conversation right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.